All right, hi everybody, good afternoon. Thanks for coming during lunch. You're welcome to eat if you'd like during my presentation. So first I wanna thank APHA and the Aging and Public Health Session for having me here today. I'm gonna speak briefly about a project that we did earlier this year, trying to better understand how we could reach underserved populations with the PEARLS program, which is a home-based depression care management program that I'll tell you a little bit about as we go forward. I have no relationship to disclose. So I'm going to just talk briefly, some background for the study, tell you a little bit about our aims and methods, spend most of the time talking about findings, and then talk about some implications for moving forward in our community. So first off, depression is an important public health issue. It's not a normal part of aging. Approximately 1 in 5 older adults are affected by depression, and it has impacts far-ranging on quality of life, on functional ability, on chronic conditions such as diabetes, and on mortality. In fact, the World Health Organization recently did identify depression as the second biggest cause of disability. It's often under-recognized and untreated or undertreated in older adult populations. We did a study several years ago where we looked at older adults that receive home and community-based services in Washington State, and about a third of them were taking antidepressants medications but still were reporting depressive symptoms. The good news is that effective treatments do exist. In 2008, the Task Force for Community Preventive Services recommended depression care management as an effective treatment. And depression care management typically entails a component for actively screening for depression in the population, having a tracking depression with a standardized tool such as the patient health questionnaire, the 9-item patient item questionnaire. Having a team-based approach, so having a psychiatrist who provides clinical supervision and having someone who's trained as a depression care manager to work with the client, so this can be a social worker, case manager, nurse, who's trained to work with the client and deliver evidence-based treatment such as problem-solving treatment or behavioral activation, and then coach the client, support them, adjust the treatment as needed, and then do some follow-up with the client as well. So I'm going to talk a little bit about PEARLS. PEARLS is the program to encourage active and rewarding lives for seniors. It was developed out of the University of Washington Health Promotion Research Center, where I work in Seattle, Washington, about 10 years ago. And PEARLS really teaches clients the skills to better manage their lives. It was designed to reach frail, homebound elders, many of which have average of 4 or 5 chronic conditions, many of which were low income and living alone, who aren't presenting at traditional mental health settings or in their primary care clinics. And so it's a very client-centered, client-driven approach. It's very practical, and it's delivered at home to try to reach the clients where they are. And it's delivered using existing community-based services. Our main partners in the original study was the local Area Agency on Aging and senior centers as well. So the evidence on PEARLS, there was a randomized control trial back in early 2000, which is published in JAMA in 2004, reporting that people who participated in PEARLS were 3 times more likely to reduce their depression than people who were getting usual care. And I should mention that some of those people in usual care were getting other depression treatment, they just weren't getting PEARLS. Since 2004, there have been several adaptations made to the program. PEARLS was originally tested in older adults with minor depression or dysthymia, and we now know that there's some evidence supporting PEARLS with all-age adults, adults with major depression, adults with epilepsy and co-occurring depression, and we've also tested a small pilot study doing PEARLS through medically trained interpreters for people who speak Russian or Somali, because in the original study it was just an English-speaking population. And I'd encourage you, for those who want to learn more about PEARLS, to attend. My colleague, Dr. Mark Snowden, will be presenting tomorrow at 8:30 to hear more about that, and I'm also available afterwards as well. So the aims of this project, we have been doing PEARLS research now for about a decade and providing technical assistance to some PEARLS sites in the past years. And we've learned that basically there are certain communities who are just not being served by PEARLS as well as they can be. And so we partnered with several local community-based organizations in the Seattle King County area to really understand how can we better reach these communities. We used a qualitative design. We really wanted to hear from people in these communities and that serve these communities, you know, how do you best describe what's going on? We used stratified purposive sampling to identify both people that deliver the intervention, the PEARLS counselors, people that are tasked with referring to PEARLS that work in these communities, and then people who have actually gone through the PEARLS program who are members of these more underserved communities as well. We use word-of-mouth recruitment through three social service agencies. There's a nonprofit community-based organization that serves Filipino elders that we worked with. There's a program through Catholic Community Services in Seattle that works with African-American elders. And then we work with an umbrella organization for several senior centers. We use semi-structured interviews, and then we analyze the text data using a method called semantic content analysis, which allows you to basically synthesize large amounts of text into categories that have similar meanings. We ended up conducting 27 interviews. Most of them were one-on-one, and they were done in person or over the phone, and we also had a couple group interviews as well. So we ended up with a total of 34 informants, 11 parole counselors, 9 referrers, and then 14 former participants. So first I'll talk about our hard-to-reach populations that were identified in this project. Veterans, African-American men and women, Filipino men, and other racial and ethnic minority groups, and people specifically talked about recent immigrants and people who are English language learners. Older adults, which many of our participants defined as people 75 years and older. People who are living in rural communities, and people with limited education. And clearly these categories are not mutually exclusive. Many of the folks we serve belong to more than one of these communities. So next I want to talk a little bit about some of our findings in terms of the barriers that people identified for reaching these communities. So mistrust was really particularly an issue for vets, for rural communities, for African-American elders, for older adults. And there's a historical basis for much of this mistrust. For vets, we had a lot of vets and people that serve vets say, you know, vets don't trust anybody because when they've, after their service, they've traditionally not received the services that they thought they would get when they came back to this country. With African-American elders, several participants talked about the exploitive research that was done in the African-American communities. One participant shared, because you have the Tuskegee experiment and all that, people tell us all the time, you're not going to experiment with me. Related to mistrust was a lack of rapport, the sense that you don't know me or understand me. And this was reported by both people who participate in the program, by clients, and then by people who serve these communities, feeling like a disconnect with these communities. Stigma is another big issue. For those of you who work with depression, I'm sure you've heard this as well. Depression is not a word that is talked about in many of these communities that we work with. One of the referrers we spoke with directs a rural senior center, and she described reaching those over 75 is hard because of the stigma of mental health, because they come from a generation where people with mental health issues were institutionalized. They were put in a basement, and they weren't talked about. And this is also particularly true stigma as an issue for working with many immigrant and African-American communities. Stigma also stems from the belief that it's really culturally inappropriate to put your feelings on the table and talk about them with somebody else, particularly someone that you don't know very well. Pearls also, for one of the clients, said that it requires somebody to own up to their own shortcomings, and that may be culturally inappropriate in certain communities. Another barrier was isolation, and this could be physical, this could be social, this could be linguistic. People having other pressing issues in their lives, so they don't see depression as the main issue. It's a housing issue, a financial issue, something with my hypertension, needing to manage my blood pressure. And then lastly, there was this barrier that some of the referrers and Pearls counselor identified, which is, you know, people from these communities, they just don't follow through. They're not motivated. And as you explored this more with them, they really described this more of as a kind of disconnect between the clients and the provider, and not so much as a kind of blame the victim. But initially, you had to kind of probe that a little bit, because that's how it came out. People also identified barriers with the model itself. Those of you who work with evidence-based programs may have heard this before. It's just too rigid. It's too inflexible. People who were in the program sometimes were frustrated by the fact they had to kind of stay on the program task, or that the sessions had to be delivered over a certain period of time in a certain order. People who referred to the program or who actually delivered the intervention, you know, sometimes felt frustrated because they couldn't talk to the client about what the client wanted to talk about, just basically have a client vent, let's say, over the course of an hour. Pearls, I should say, is a program that's very brief. It's delivered in 6 to 8 sessions over a 4 to 5 month period. And it's got a pretty structured approach. There's time to, you know, check in with the client and talk with them about their lives throughout, but it's got a pretty structured pattern that needs to be followed. And so some people felt it was too rigid. It's still kind of hard to describe Pearls to people. Like I said earlier, Pearls is not like most traditional mental health programs. It's very client-driven. The counselor's there really more as a support and a guide than as a telling the client what to do. And that could be hard to describe both for people who are trying to get people into Pearls and then also for people who want to participate in the program as well. And then for some people, they just felt the program model wasn't acceptable. For some people, again, they don't want to be in a treatment that is very driven by them. They want somebody to be driving or telling them kind of what they need. We also found from some people that it just wasn't culturally acceptable. One woman I remember described to me that, you know, historically African American women have not been socialized to drive or to have a voice. And this program requires you to have a voice. And so there needs to be some work if we want to engage members of that community in this program. So we next looked at, given all these barriers, you know, what are some of the strategies that we can use for improving recruitment? And so partnering with local trusted organizations and leaders to help with some of that mistrust and building rapport. Having members of people in the hard-to-reach communities who've gone through the program or who believe in the program facilitate recruitment and really share stories of how it worked for them and just make it more meaningful. Using a variety of media, so not just print materials, but materials that are acceptable in these communities. One of the communities we work with uses a local radio program that's very popular with the Filipino community. Reframing pearls, so talking about life skills and problem solving and not about depression as much, and really framing it as something that they can address whatever is important to them in their lives. You know, a lot of our clients use problem solving treatment to address things like financial and housing and other issues of managing their health, even though it's in the umbrella of a depression program. And then really allowing sufficient time for recruitment with these communities. It takes time to build relationships. It takes time to build trust and rapport. And so we need to have time to do that. People also identified several strategies for improving retention, or basically keeping people enrolled in the program, preventing them from dropping out. People talked about PEARLS counselors needing to be caring, trustworthy individuals who are really consistently there when they say they're going to be there. Really meeting the clients where they are. The program was designed to be at home, and that is beneficial for some people, but for some clients, it's easier to meet at another setting, and so some agencies will start or do a later session at the community center, let's say. And then being really flexible with session timing. As I said earlier, the program was designed to be six to eight sessions tapered over a 4 to 5 month period. And so some people, when the program moves from being every other week to monthly, get a little discouraged and kind of feel like, oh, this counselor's abandoning me. And so maybe we can kind of taper a little bit more slowly. Or could we have some booster sessions or support groups after the program's ended so that those people who are really struggling with the session ending can have some support as well. So what are some of the implications for this work? I should first say that this project found fairly similar findings when you look in the literature as other studies that look at reaching underserved communities with evidence-based programs. Clearly, it's a big deal balancing fidelity to the original program model and adapting the program to be relevant to your community and your community's needs. In terms of future activities, we are working very hard right now to expand our network of PEARLS providers and researchers. We are fortunate to do monthly conference calls right now, providing technical assistance to PEARLS sites, and that's become a really nice mechanism for also just linking other providers kind of outside of the work with the university so that they can connect on any issues that they're facing. Developing new materials that are going to better meet the needs of these hard-to-reach communities and using meaningful messages to them. So we're developing a PEARLS video, sharing client stories, because really stories are what move people. We, originally when PEARLS was developed, it was all about, oh, it's evidence-based and look at our data, and, you know, that doesn't move a lot of people outside of university communities at times. And so, you know, really having clients share their stories in writing or in this video about, you know, this is how it worked for me. You know, I got up, I cooked dinner for my family again, I brushed my hair and put on my makeup and left the house and I wasn't doing that. You know, how did this help me? And then tailoring materials to our communities. Right now, one of our programs is working with the VA to better tailor materials to serve veterans and using, you know, what's worked in the past for them. In terms of challenges, I mean, I think the main challenge is that, you know, a lot of funding from research grants or from contracts to provide these services, you know, don't really allow for the sufficient time needed to do the recruitment in communities that are hard to reach. In Washington State, we've had a few nice examples in terms of moving forward. There's been a Medicaid waiver program in Washington State that now PEARLS is covered as a Medicaid waiver service. And in that contract, they've actually provided for a session of screening and recruiting people and not just the intervention itself. So that's pretty great. We've also have a levy in the Seattle King County area that specifically supports services for some hard-to-reach communities, such as veterans and some racial and ethnic minority communities. So I'd like to thank the folks with which this study would not be possible. We got So funding from CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, their Prevention Research Centers program. Our study participants, you know, who really took the time and shared their experience and their insights with us, and we really are grateful for that. Our organizations that we partnered with that help with recruitment and do deliver pearls now, so Margaret Boddy at the African American Elders Program, Slugo and Maravik Rigor at the International Drop-In Center, and Andrew and Mies Sanchez at Senior Services. I also want to thank my research team. Dr. Mark Snowden is led up pearls implementation and dissemination research at the Health Promotion Research Center for the past 6 years, and he's been a great mentor for me. And then Kristen Hammerback, who's a research scientist that we work with, who helped with data collection and analysis. I'm happy to answer questions now. Here's my contact info. I'll be sticking around after the session for a bit. Also, if you want to learn more about pearls, check out the pearls program website. Check out HPRC's website, or like I said, tomorrow morning at 8:30, there'll be another presentation about pearls. Thank you.